Well met, and welcome to episode 58, the Bill Shakespeare Project podcast for November 21st, 2010. For our blog and previous podcast episodes, check us out at thebillshakespeareproject.com. Greetings. This is Bill Walthall, and this week we're going to continue our month-long discussion of Richard II with a discussion of the Richard II productions that are found on disc and the internet. Then we'll finish up with our usual recap of this week's blog entries. Now, as we usually do, we're going to start our DVD reviews with the BBC Complete Works series. Interestingly enough, Richard II was the second play to be taped for that first season in 1978. It was the second play to be broadcast in the UK, but the third in the US, pushed back by the more popular As You Like It. This production was directed by David Giles. Now, a few months ago, when we were covering King John, we discussed a little trivia concerning the directing of the history plays in this series. When the overall series was being planned, the idea was that Giles would direct all of the histories in the two tetralogies from Richard II through Richard III, employing the same actors in their roles across all of the plays. But when scheduling issues arose with the actors, particularly those playing Hotspur and Northumberland in this play, that plan was scrapped and the second chronological tetralogy, which we watched late last year and in January of this year, was given to Jane Howell to direct. Giles still directed the remainder of this tetralogy, the two Henry IV plays and Henry V. Now, while this production is still stagey, it's certainly more realistic in its sets than the abstract presentation of King John, which Giles also directed. The costumes are opulent, especially Richard's. He comes off as someone who cares almost too much about his appearance. This only adds to his seeming lack of resolution. If Derek Jacobi isn't playing Richard as overtly gay, then he certainly is effeminate, especially when we see him in the first act being massaged by Green. The opening scene plays slow and long, and it keeps any rhythm from being built. But maybe that's the point. It's a metaphor for Richard himself. He isn't strong enough to take charge of the situation. He lets it go on too long. When in the third scene Richard banishes Mowbray, there's a real sense of betrayal from Richard Owens, a clue to us that King Richard was behind the murder of Gloucester. In the small but crucial role of John of Gaunt, John Gielgud is simply awesome. Old, but wise and quick-witted, dying but still strong, his Gaunt is a giant among men. If only he had been king, so much of this would not have happened. As his son, John Finch's Bolingbroke is an enigma. Does he want the throne? Is that why he came back? Or did he really just want what was rightfully his? Of course, this begs the question, did he feel that the throne was rightfully his? He certainly isn't above political maneuverings, as his homosexual accusations during Bushy and Green's trial attest. Northumberland is clearly disturbed by this revelation. Or is he just disturbed that it's being made in a public statement? Is Bolingbroke sincerely religious? We're never sure. And I think this works, particularly in the comic scene with York, his son O'Merle, and the Duchess of York. Bolingbroke is trapped in a domestic scene that he wants no part of. Almost like it often seems, he wants no part of any of this. This is a solid production, made all the better by a combination of Giles's directorial touches and Jacobi's performance. The angelic whites of Richard's costuming in contrast to the deep reds of Bolingbroke. The youth of Richard's queen. In reality, she was only 11 years old. The passion of the goodbye kiss between Richard and that young queen. The dividing up of Richard's final soliloquy to show the passage of time. The removal of all Prince Hal references in the play. Since the next three plays, the Henriette, as some critics would call them, wouldn't air immediately, there's no reason to link this play to those others. And so it works well to keep the focus on Bolingbroke and Richard by leaving out Hal. But Giles's influence is nothing compared to the masterpiece that is Jacobi's mercurial performance. It's all over the place. Effeminate, petulant, strong, angry, despairing, ethereal, cursing, thoughtful, a fighter when he's threatened by the murderers. How else to play the poet king but by playing to all human emotions? This also ties into the historical theories that Richard suffered from mental illness, particularly in the later years, the ones covered by this play. Simply brilliant and highly recommended. Okay, so that was the late 70s BBC Complete Works production. Let's transition now to the 1960s BBC Shakespeare's and Age of Kings sequence of history plays. Like nearly all of the plays, Richard II is broken into two episodes, The Hollow Crown and The Deposing of a King, both directed by the director of the entire series, Michael Hayes. Remember, this is from the old days when the look and feel is more like a black and white Twilight Zone, stagey and a little fuzzy around the edges. When we meet David Williams as Richard, he is haughty and condescending. When Bolingbroke makes his Gloucester accusation, the camera zooms in on Richard's face, and we see his guilt. Later, we see Richard in his court, and he's surrounded by hangers-on, both men and women, and the women are giggling. This is an effeminate Richard, giddy and almost flouncing when he hears that John of Gaunt is sick. But he's not gay. The reactions of Bushy and Green to the accusations of divorcing the royal bed are met with glances to each other that read as collective, huh? Now, sick John of Gaunt is played by Edgar Reifert, and he gives this confrontation with Richard a real power. Almost too much so, you think, while watching it, until he gets to the end of it and he collapses. It's nicely done. It's a pretty straightforward production. No frills, no thrills, save for one. Hotspur is played by a really young Sean Connery. I can't wait to see what he does with the role in later episodes. The first hour ends at the end of Act 3, Scene 2, at Richard's line, "Discharge my followers, let them hence away, from Richard's night to Bolingbroke's fair day." This is when Richard metaphorically abdicates the throne to us, the audience. Now, the second hour, The Deposing of a King, takes us through the end of the play. It's obvious here that Bolingbroke is willing to take only his titles and leave Richard as king, but Richard wants to give it up, only to back out later, once Bolingbroke is willing to accept it. Now, even if he's willing to accept it, Tom Fleming's Bolingbroke takes no joy in it, all rigidity and seriousness. The read I get from this production is that the only reason Bolingbroke finally takes the throne is that Richard toys with him during the deposition scene. It's interesting how, that once that happens, their personalities switch. Bolingbroke becomes haughty and arrogant, Richard serious. And to keep it serious, director Hayes cuts the possibly comic O'Merle York Henry sequence. Instead, we cut immediately to Richard's soliloquy in prison, delivered directly to the camera. Gone is the self-pity, the arrogance. Gone are all the roles that he's been playing. And this is a Richard that we like. And then he's dead. When his body is presented to Henry, the new king begins to feel the griefs that Richard did. It's a great ending to a moderately successful overall production. Let's finish with the Richard II section of the English Shakespeare Company's production of The War of the Roses, directed by Michael Bogdanov. It was done back in 1990, and I found it on YouTube. As in The Age of Kings, this is the play that kicks off the entire series, and here we get very little exposition. We're dumped right into what looks to be a glorified English sitting room. Very 19th century, sumptuous costuming, and over the course of the play, the settings evolve to a more early 20th century vibe, almost World War I-ish. When we meet Michael Pennington's Richard, he's incredibly patronizing to John of Gaunt, slightly effeminate but grossly arrogant. Bolingbroke is called forth, and he immediately and visually differentiates himself from the other Henrys we've seen. Michael Cronin is burly, physically imposing. This plays well in the trial by combat sequence in which Bolingbroke and Mowbray actually get in a couple of strikes before Richard calls it off, giving us the idea that Richard was afraid of how this would all turn out. This sequence, too, displays the high level of pomp and ceremony in the play. It's interesting to look at this and then to think back on the Henry VI's and Richard III's sequence of The War of the Roses and note the relative lack of ceremony in those later plays, a way of seeing the breakdown of society and its norms. When Clyde Pollitt gets his big scene as John of Gaunt, he nails it. Limited in movement to a wheelchair, he tears into Richard and physically repels the king. It's a great acting scene for both actors. Great, too, and something to generate some excitement as we head into the Henryad, is the introduction of Andrew Jarvis as Hotspur. If the name is familiar, it's because he was the kick-ass Richard III from this multiplay series. I cannot wait for next month to see how he attacks that role. This excites me even more than Connery in The Age of Kings. But just as the Complete Works production is dominated by Jacoby's Richard, this too is dominated by Pennington, who was Buckingham in The Richard III and who will be Prince Hal and Henry V in months to come from this War of the Roses. Like Jacoby, he brings a kitchen sink mentality to the role, effeminate, arrogant, petulant, patronizing, then fearful, but a fighter, more broken than the queen, but above all, an actor, playing whatever emotion he thinks befits his audience at that moment. When finally left alone for the soliloquy, the raw, played emotions are tossed away, and he's just a man. No longer a king or God's substitute, he is a man that we can relate to. It's a lovely performance. Bogdanov's direction is riddled with nice touches. When Bolingbroke accuses Mowbray of Gloucester's murder, it's a shock to everybody on stage. The jettisoning of Act 1, Scene 2 between John of Gaunt and Gloucester's widow isn't missed. While it has some nice stuff in it regarding the divine right of kings, I can see why it was cut from the overall 23-hour running time of The War of the Roses. When we see characters being imprisoned, Bushy and Green, and later Richard, we see that they've been physically beaten. A nice touch of dark realism there. After the big finish of Richard's pre-death soliloquy and murder, I think it was a wise choice to trim that final scene, making it more of a bridge to the next play rather than a long parade of reports of people who had been executed. Now, the complete works production is available from both Netflix and Amazon, and as I said before, it's highly recommended. The Age of Kings production is available only for sale from outlets like Amazon and is required viewing only for completists. And finally, Bogdanov's The War of the Roses is a great production, but available only on YouTube and linked on our Bill Shakespeare Project YouTube page. And there will be a link from this podcast's blog entry to that YouTube page. Now, if you've enjoyed this podcast but you haven't been following along with our daily blog entries this week, you've missed out on subjects including historical timeline, historical inaccuracies, the throne ain't no popularity contest, the balance of power, vials of royalty, and fire and water. So, if you would like more in-depth discussions or just want a daily fix, check out the blog entries at thebillshakespeareproject.com or become a fan of our Facebook page. Remember that the Facebook page is more for Shakespeare news and notes than daily discussions of our play of the month. Also, if you have any question or comment about this or any other Bill Shakespeare Project podcast or blog entry, you can always lob me an email at bill@thebillshakespeareproject.com. And of course, please join us again for our next podcast. We hope to see you then. You've been listening to the Bill Shakespeare Project podcast for November 21st, 2010. For our blog and previous podcast episodes, check us out at thebillshakespeareproject.com, and we shall see thee anon.